Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to another episode. Today, we're going to be exploring the question of what is the line between a healthy level of nostalgia and getting stuck in the past. And we're also going to talk a little bit more about why, from my perspective, we do romanticize and live in the past. Now, I've done one other episode that was similar, but it wasn't so much focused on the past. It was more just about romanticizing life and the thin line between that practice and escapism. So kind of a similar idea today, but with a focus on the past. And as we know, I've had a lot of change in my life in the last year. I went from living in an apartment in Vancouver, kind of relatively carefree, not a great deal of responsibility, to finding out I was pregnant, moving back to my hometown, purchasing a house. And, you know, I've mentioned that throughout all of that change, I have sort of compartmentalized things and just put one foot in front of the other. I feel like with so much changing, sometimes it's just about staying present and not actually allowing myself to feel that deep sense of sadness or grieving that I usually do when I'm transitioning in life in some way. And I think that's in part because I'm somewhat used to change at this point and transition. I have certainly had my fair share of relatively big life changes in the last, you know, 10 years, I would say, from massive career changes, to moving cities, to moving to a different country, to changing my friendship groups, to moving in with a new partner. And I would say that this change that I'm experiencing right now of being on the cusp of entering parenthood and moving back to my hometown and all of these things that I'm currently experiencing, it's kind of the first time that I'm experiencing them alongside someone else. I feel like in the past, I did a lot of these things when I was on my own. And as I've gone through this change with someone else, in other words, with my partner, Jamie, I've been able to see my way of coping with change through a slightly different lens. As we were sort of making the decisions and navigating the recent changes, Jamie actually observed that I had no emotion throughout that experience, or it appeared that I had very little emotion, which was what it felt like, to be honest. And it kind of surprised me. I really didn't feel this strong flood of emotion, despite experiencing a lot of change and a lot of things that I was like sad to move away from, i.e. friendships in Vancouver, our space in Vancouver. And despite being very excited about the next chapter, I think two things can be true at the same time. So I, in theory, felt sad about the transition, but it was almost like I couldn't access the emotion, the actual emotional release that I typically would feel. And that's been really interesting to observe in myself. I think, like I said, it's a combination of just compartmentalizing and needing to set things up and kind of just needing to keep putting one foot in front of the other, combined with having made a lot of big changes and sort of being somewhat used to that experience. But what I've noticed now, sort of as things have settled a bit more, I've had more time to digest the last few months and reflect on everything, is that it's almost like I'm opening that door a little crack to start processing everything and thinking about the past. And I've almost wondered myself if the reason I sort of keep that door closed often is because I worry about the flood of emotion or the nostalgia that will come. I'm reminded of times where I've immersed myself in past memories and become overwhelmed with nostalgia, and sometimes that dull ache or sadness, maybe even regret or romanticizing things to the point of feeling maybe even discontent with my present circumstances. And I guess there's some part of me that doesn't want to repeat that pattern. Like, I'm almost afraid of opening up the door even just a crack, because I don't, first of all, want to take away from the joy that I feel for my current life chapter, and I just want to keep moving forward. But at the same time, what I've recognized is I don't want to be in this place where I never allow myself to look back, to appreciate the past, to reminisce on pleasant memories, to reflect on the way one thing has led to another. So I've been thinking about and reflecting on finding that balance, again, between a healthy level of nostalgia and reflection versus becoming stuck in the past. So that's what we're going to explore in this episode. And as always, I asked for your input on Instagram, and I'll be sharing some of your thoughts and questions at the end as well. So first, I want to begin by exploring the question of why do we look into the past, and what can we gain by revisiting past memories? And of course, there could be so many different reasons, but from my perspective, it really comes down to a few things. First of all, to process and make sense of things, to process emotions, memories. If you think about therapy, or at least a lot of the talk therapy that I have done, it often involves revisiting memories to make sense of current behaviors, to explore why we feel the way we do about ourselves, about others, about the world, why we react in certain ways, and why we believe what we believe, for example. And I think having a few data points from the past can help us to learn lessons and do things differently and interrupt patterns if we want to. The opportunity, in my opinion, is to, yes, look to the past to understand ourselves better, but to be able to recognize that we have the choice now of changing if we want to. And I've talked before about how revisiting past experiences in therapy and in my own reflections has helped me to contextualize and understand my intense fear of social rejection. And part of me feels like understanding that certain life experiences can produce a specific reaction in the present, that helps me to actually feel a little bit liberated from that experience and say, okay, so this happened to me in the past, but it's not necessarily a fundamental part of my personality. It maybe was just a way that I coped. And now I have the opportunity to look at that information and decide if that's how I want to react moving forward. In other words, I can recognize that I have a specific behavior around something that I perceive to be a rejection, and then I can look into the past for information about why that may be. But I can also acknowledge that my current reaction doesn't feel pleasant, and I can seek to shift into something new. The point for me, though, has always been to be purposeful with the usage of information from the past, especially when it comes to painful memories or why I may have developed some sort of coping mechanism. And I have found at times that I've gotten stuck in that exploration of the past and not really carried it forward in any way. And I experienced this with anxiety when I was really having an intense period of anxiety for a few years. I was obsessed with investigating the past and trying to understand how and why I got to where I was with my mental health, but I wasn't really processing that and doing anything about it. So I was just kind of hung up on trying to get to the bottom of it, trying to get to the root, which, like I said, can be helpful. But for me, in order for it to be helpful, it has to be applied in some way to my current circumstance. I also never wanted to be tied so tightly to that past experience and allow it to paint the picture of my future. It's kind of like, you know, the study of history. We, of course, want to understand the past and how we got to where we are now, but an important part of the study of history is also doing things differently, learning from past mistakes, making course corrections to, you know, take advantage of new information that we have now and new data and resources and technology that are available to shift and evolve. And then as much as looking to the past can help us to process things, to learn lessons, to interrupt patterns, I also think that it can just be a fun way to pass the time, to recall and play out old memories. It's like, why do we look through old photos or watch home videos? Sometimes it's not necessarily to learn something or to gain some sort of insight. It's just enjoyable to immerse ourselves in the past or to look at life through the lens of a former version of ourselves. I'm lucky enough to have kept journals since I was like 6 years old. And honestly, one of my favorite things to do every now and then is to read through them and just revisit a former version of myself, remembering what it was like to see life through that lens. And, you know, like I said, it can be just a pleasurable activity, but even this, I find, has lessons in it. There are certain ways that I would think when I was younger that I would articulate, or, you know, things that I would say about myself or the world that I would find inspiring, and part of me can learn through that past version of myself. I think there are so many ways to access this experience of being transported into the past in a really kind of immersive way that makes you feel almost the similar sensations from that period of time, or, you know, just really brings you back. As I was recording this episode, took a break to listen to some old music from, you know, my teen angst days, which just like immediately puts me back in that place in a good way. And I think music is a really powerful vehicle for that. Photos, videos, movies, stories. For whatever reason, I also feel like, for me personally, immersing myself in old memories in this way, reading old journals, listening to music, it makes me feel some sense of compassion and tenderness towards former versions of myself, which is sometimes a really nice gift to give myself, is just to look back and reflect on former versions of myself, just kind of making my way through life and knowing that there will be a version of myself in the future that may look back at me now and feel that same sense of compassion, and knowing that, you know, things will work out. I say all this to acknowledge that there are a lot of reasons to revisit the past, many of which are valid and I would argue can be helpful in some way to our current self. But what we're here to explore today is sort of that tipping point of when does it become counterproductive, unpleasant, or maybe even destructive in some way to our current self. I'm sure we all know of at least one person who seems to be stuck in the past, someone who constantly talks about how much better off they were, how much better things were, how they would have done things differently if given the chance. And maybe we even observe these behaviors in ourselves. I think I can think of a few people where those tendencies are very pronounced, and it makes me that much more aware of when I do that myself and really how unpleasant it feels. I feel like this mentality of being better off in the past, or the past being, you know, somehow better than the present, it seems to be sort of rooted in this belief that we have limited access to certain things in our lifetime, whether that's happiness or opportunities, friendship, connection, money, pleasure. And when we're stuck in the past, it's almost like we believe our access to one or all of those things has expired. And so our only way of getting a taste of it is to revisit the past. The question then becomes, how does this cycle of revisiting the past and romanticizing the past and reliving memories with the intention of accessing certain things, how much does that take us out of accessing these things in our present circumstances? Because again, we're constantly operating on this bias that we were better off in the past, or things were better in the past. So this speaks to the first tendency when it comes to revisiting the past that I want to explore a little further, which again is assuming that we were better off in some way in the past, that things will never again be as good as they once were. And another way of putting this is looking at the past through rose-tinted glasses. While it may be true to some extent that we won't be able to replicate past experiences exactly or access certain things in the exact way we remember them, again, I think this tendency cuts us off from present opportunities. There's someone in my life who tends to do this a lot, who talks about if they were able to go back and make decisions differently, they would have pursued art a little bit further. And this person has been talking about this for so long now, which has made me wonder what it would have been like if, instead of having that regret and holding on to that regret and believing that if they had made a decision differently earlier in life, they would have been somewhere with art that they wanted to be, I wonder what it would be like if that person just decided to pursue art using the tools and the resources and the inspiration that they currently have access to. What I've noticed, of course, within myself and others is that this tendency is more prominent when we're dissatisfied with some aspect of our current circumstances. What we're talking about here, though, is coping with that feeling of dissatisfaction by revisiting the past, and often doing so in a very selective way rather than trying to address the source of dissatisfaction head on in the present moment and to use our time and energy to focus on that. And don't get me wrong, I think sometimes we all need a break from our circumstances, and revisiting pleasant memories can be an outlet or a relief. But what we're talking about here falls more into the escapism category. What I'm wondering is, what is the cost to my present self and my present circumstances of constantly revisiting and romanticizing the past? And again, doing so under the assumption that things were better. And when we're assuming in some way that things were astronomically better in the past, I find that, like I said, it's a selective process of seeking memories that confirm that idea that we were better off then, we were having more fun then. But I think, you know, memory isn't perfect. So it's harder in those moments to have a holistic view of what a past experience was actually like to live in. So I'm getting sort of a flattened down, condensed snippet of the past that is often embellished and through the lens of my own belief that it was better back then, rather than getting an actual sense of the texture and the depth and the nuance of that memory. And so, in other words, when I'm romanticizing in this way, I'm often selecting highlights and I'm leaving out the mundane, the uncomfortable, the unpleasant parts. And I do think that that's like a natural thing to do, but when we're not aware of it, we may...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Wrongly believe and buy into this idea that we were way better off at some point in the past. One example that I think illustrates this tendency is that period following a breakup when someone starts to have doubts about their decision, which I think is a very natural thing with a lot of big life decisions, even if a lot has gone into making that decision. So in the case of a breakup, maybe this person starts to ask themselves, like, was it really that bad? They may begin to select memories from the relationship that contradict their decision for leaving it. So in other words, pleasant, enjoyable, fun, loving memories, and almost sort of forget all of the reasons why they chose to leave that relationship to begin with. And in that mode of thinking, sometimes people act on it and decide to get back together and it can work out. But you see a lot of people making decisions based on a skewed, romanticized version of the relationship and then finding themselves like right back in it, reliving all of the things that made them break it off in the first place. But again, when we're operating from that romanticized view and seeking to confirm some sort of bias that it was better in the past, we seem to forget the layeredness of the experience. A personal memory that I've romanticized a lot in the past is I spent a semester abroad in university. I went to school in France. And when I'm in that romanticizing mode, I'm thinking about the freedom, the novelty, the food, the friends I made. But when I take a step back and I allow myself to think more neutrally or holistically about the experience, I invite in memories of the anxiety of trying to find an apartment, of the creepy roommate I ended up living with who I felt extremely uncomfortable around, the loneliness, the missing my family, the being constantly extremely broke, the feeling nervous that I wasn't going to make any friends, the awful hangovers, the way I felt after nights out. And being open to that side of things isn't with the intention of convincing myself that actually that experience wasn't all that great. It's more so to realize that, like many things in life, it was a bit of both. And if I'm going to measure a a past experience to my current circumstance, I have to look at the whole picture and be accurate. I find that when I challenge myself to do that, I'm less inclined to think in that way of, I was better off at this point in the past. And the last clear example that I'm sure we've all encountered is collectively former generations romanticizing the past, saying things like, those were the days, or it was so much better in the 60s, or, you know, things like that. And remembering that this time period, these time periods that are often being romanticized or glorified, also involved a lot of oppression, a lot of people not having rights. I just think that there's this desire, maybe on some level, to put life experiences into a category. So good, bad, black, white. And the reality is it's often a lot more nuanced than that. So I come away from reflecting on this tendency to assume we were better off in the past with a couple of insights. Number one, does it help my current circumstances to assume that I had access to something in the past, like happiness, pleasure, freedom, but I no longer have access to it? Would it be more helpful to consider what opportunities I have to access these things I desire in my current circumstances and to seek those things out? The second reflection is, when measuring my current circumstances to my past, can I challenge myself to be accurate? In other words, not only selecting memories that confirm a specific bias. Okay, the next thing that I want to discuss, and this actually came up a lot in the Instagram responses, is looking into the past and wishing we had done something differently or wanting to change the past. Usually under the assumption that if we had, we'd be better off now. And again, in some cases, if not many, that may be true. But I have to say, for me personally, this is something that I actually rarely do, or I try not to do. Maybe I used to do it more in the past, but number one, this made me feel stuck. And number two, I just didn't find it to be helpful whatsoever. You know, going back to the reasons why we would revisit the past, one of them we discussed was learning a lesson or creating a new pattern. Simply wishing that we had done something differently in the past without an associated present action or change is very obviously not productive, in my opinion. For example, maybe I had a conversation with someone and I regret something I said. To ruminate on that regret without A, making a change, or B, maybe even apologizing to the recipient in the conversation, is just a recipe for spiraling, as is generally regretting our past. I think obviously regret can be a lesson, a teacher to, hey, I didn't like the way I dealt with that situation. I didn't like the decision that I made. I didn't like the way that I talked to someone. And this feeling of regret is telling me that I want to make a different decision next time I'm presented with that situation or scenario. And going back to the conversation example, I, in the past, would often walk away from conversations and ruminate for hours on having said something in a way that I didn't like, or maybe even in some cases that I know was hurtful. I think this experience of ruminating on conversations or interpersonal interactions, it comes from a place of wanting to be accepted and loved, which I think is valid. But I just found for me that there was a tipping point at which I would just spiral, and this rumination would almost become a means to create narratives about myself and how unlovable I am and how bad of a person I am, or whatever it may be. It's also just a lot of mental energy And without actually directing that mental energy towards making some sort of change, I think we just sort of spin the wheels. So when I started to notice that this way of looking at the past, especially from an interpersonal perspective, was draining me, was not enjoyable, and wasn't helpful in any way, I made a resolution to myself that whenever I felt this, you know, walking away from an interaction with someone and I noticed that twinge of regret or wishing I had said something differently, I would either A, spend some time reflecting on how I would have handled the conversation differently so I can learn from it, or B, if I felt comfortable doing so, it can actually feel really good to have a conversation with the person and give myself the opportunity to apologize or try again. So taking that energy that would otherwise go to spiraling, ruminating, creating some sort of narrative about myself or regretting some aspect of the past, taking that energy and putting it somewhere, hopefully productive. So again, sometimes for me, that's simply an internal reflective experience. What would I do differently next time I'm presented with this? But sometimes there's an outward action, decision, or conversation that can provide relief, sort of on both sides. You know, addressing the situation directly, if it's interpersonal, having a conversation with someone, apologizing, making a change or a new decision, moving from a space of regret to perhaps compassion to our former selves, not expecting perfection and being able to take accountability for mistakes while also recognizing we're not going to get things right all of the time. This is actually something that, interestingly, I see come up a lot in different parenting teachings that I've read over the years, which is sort of this idea that we can't expect ourselves to never raise our voice or never have moments where we may say something that we regret or maybe we snap at our child, but to be able to practice having conversations afterwards, for taking accountability, for making a mistake and explaining to our children, like, hey, I had a moment, I didn't like that I said that to you, and I apologize. That is such an important thing for not just you, but for the child, and an important opportunity to connect. And again, I don't think that just applies with parenting. I think the same can be true for so many interpersonal relationships. I think that there's a lot of power in being able to apologize or be vulnerable or accept that we may not have acted exactly how we wanted to or we would like to, and to be able to own that and to make a new decision moving forward. And I think that it can be liberating to voice that, especially if, again, it's an interpersonal experience, and not just for you as the individual that wants to voice that, but for the person that you may have had that interaction with. But then there's also the experience of not so much interpersonal regret or wishing we had done or said something differently, but also regretting certain life choices or even not having made certain choices and feeling like we missed out on something. My observation is that often when we're in that feeling of regretting a former decision, we're usually looking at it through the lens of knowing what we know now, and we most likely didn't have that insight or access to that information at the time. And there's no denying that sometimes some decision that we made was just the wrong decision, and there's not really much to be gained from ruminating on that, like, this was just objectively a bad decision and I wouldn't repeat it. End of story. What we're talking about here is more so things that at one point felt right, and now we look back at and wish we hadn't done that thing or made that decision. So maybe breaking up with someone, quitting a job, moving to a new city, ending a friendship. The thing about regretting certain decisions that felt right at a point in time is that we don't necessarily know what the alternative would have been if we didn't make that decision or if we made a different decision. Again, though, I think often that regret comes from a place of believing that the alternative would have been better. So maybe we move to a new city and feel some sense of regret about that, but we can't know for sure that the alternative would have been better. And my feeling is that if we were operating on what felt right at the time, using the information that we had access to at the time, we can't really expect ourselves to have made a different decision. And I actually think that it's natural to some extent to feel some level of regret about almost anything in life at some point, because we're going to wonder about the alternatives. But another helpful thing to consider when having doubts or regrets is that I may simply not have had the whole picture yet. So I may be feeling some sense of doubt or regret or sadness about some decision that I've made, but I don't necessarily have the whole picture of how that decision will weave into other things down the line, maybe very positive things for all I know. I remember when I quit my first job out of university, the initial relief that I felt was followed by a huge wave of fear and regret, which if I had acted on that and gone back and begged for the job, there's a whole series of events that wouldn't have happened in the way that they did. So I wouldn't have met Jamie. I wouldn't have probably moved to Vancouver, wouldn't be starting a family now necessarily with Jamie, may have never created this podcast. Similar to how I was saying that past experiences don't have to be all one way or another, so good or bad, I feel similarly with these life decisions. We could spend our time poking holes in many of the big decisions we make and weighing the pros and cons until we're blue in the face, but every decision we make will have a combination of outcomes that we deem to be positive or negative, and it's impossible to know what those things are the moment we make decisions. So the best that we can expect ourselves to do is go with what we feel we want and use the information we have access to at the time. The last thing that I do want to say about regretting certain decisions is that I also think it's okay to change your mind about things. It feels like that's such an unacceptable thing. We have to make decisions and commit to them. But for me, I find it a lot more liberating to be like, okay, I'm making this decision right now with the data, information, and insights, and feelings and desires that I have access to in this moment. And I know that those things may evolve and change as I evolve and change. If I quit my job to become self-employed because that's what feels right at the time, the option to get a job again doesn't just dissolve. Maybe there will be new challenges associated with that process, but again, it doesn't mean that the option isn't available. And I do find that way of thinking liberating when I'm making big decisions, like even leaving Vancouver, having this mentality that this is what's best for now. This is what we're going to do. And yes, it may be a huge pain to move back here at some point in the future if we ever wanted to do that. But the door is still open. That option still exists if we want to take it. And yes, of course, there are circumstances where changing your mind won't matter. Like maybe you're regretting a breakup, but the person doesn't want to get back together. It's too late. And the tendency here may be to slap on a platitude like, you know, everything happens for a reason. And while that may be comforting, I think sometimes things just are what they are. I don't think that there always needs to be some grander reason that something didn't work out. Sometimes they just don't. The question here is, do we want to allow ourselves to become so intertwined with that unchangeable past circumstance to the point of not being able to move forward? As promised, to round out this episode, I want to get into some of your responses to my Instagram sticker. So someone said, it's easy to look back on periods of my life thinking it was, quote, the best, forgetting I had many sad days. Very much relatable, very much connected with what we were talking about, and that tendency to assume that the past was this great time and that it was exciting and fun. And, you know, while that may be true to some extent, there were parts of it that, like this person said, were sad, were lonely, were boring, were mundane. Another person said, I've been recently thinking, trying to participate in what little me loved. This is such a sweet sentiment and speaks to what I was exploring earlier when I shared about looking back at old journals and how connecting with that version of myself and revisiting the past in that way offers me an opportunity to, again, see my life through that lens. And sometimes I find that there are things that I can see in my younger self that I may have lost over the course of the years and that I want to reintegrate in some way. For me, and I've talked about this before in episodes, one thing that kept coming up when I would reread old journals was I saw myself as very artistic, very creative, very talented. And I saw myself in such a special way. And I think over the years, that kind of began to fall off. And I was much more critical with myself, especially like not seeing myself as a creative person whatsoever as a result of the narratives about who is and isn't artistic or creative. And so that's been one thing that I've been revisiting within myself. And again, looking back at the past and at that version of myself in order to understand that, hey, I actually did have access to my creativity and to my belief that I'm a creative artistic person when I was really little, and maybe I can get back to that way of seeing myself. Okay, I'll read one last response. This person said, romanticizing an awful time in life / nostalgia for unhealthy eras. I can totally relate to this. In fact, Jamie and I talk about this a lot, and especially now that we're like feeling a lot more adult, if that makes sense, and feeling a lot more settled, and we'll often think about eras where we were a lot more unhealthy and partying a lot, and sometimes I think the tendency is to romanticize those times because, again, there's this feeling of fun and freedom associated with those memories. But for me specifically, that period of time where I was, quite frankly, abusing substances was a really dark time in many ways. And I often forget that when I'm in that mode of romanticizing those eras. And I have to ask myself, like, is that something that you would really want for yourself now in those periods of time where I am feeling nostalgic? And the answer is quite often no. And it doesn't mean that I can't ever, you know, go out again and have fun and party and drink alcohol if I want to. But to romanticize the way that I went about that period of my life would be, again, inaccurate because it was simultaneously very fun and also the lowest my mental health has ever been. So, my friends, that is it for this episode. I hope that you enjoyed. This was a really interesting thing to explore, and I'll be thinking a lot about this balance and, again, challenging myself to be mindful of some of the tendencies we discussed in this episode. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. There's the Q&A feature directly on Spotify if you want to leave a comment there, or you can submit anonymously. There's a link in the show notes. But yeah, as always, I want to just thank you for being here, and I'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.